This week's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook download right now at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. There's over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Find best-selling books by top authors from every genre at audible.com/thekingsofsport.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport. TheKingsOfSport.com.
I'm Alfred Kunawa. On this week's show, we're talking about the NBA playoffs, the Stanley Cup playoffs, and Brittany Griner getting heat for her tweets.
I'm Marcus Vanderbilt, and we'll talk about our favorite hip-hop side hustles. Plus, we'll talk about who looked like fools at WWE's Extreme Rules.
And I'm Nate Milton. Listener Jamie Robinson is in the house to tell us about his win in our bracket challenge and his love for old school hip-hop. We've got all that and more on today's show, so buckle up, enjoy the ride, and listen to us do our thing, because you're Down with the Kings.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Kunawa, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderbilt. So sit back and relax, because you're now Down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sports. What is going on, everybody? I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Alfred Big Nasty Kunawa, and of course, Marcus Vanderbilt. What's going down, fellas?
What's going on, Nate?
What's up, Nate?
Not much. Had a pretty good day. But, before we get into what's going on, you know, not only with us, but also in the world of sports, I want to send a big shout-out to our brand-new sponsor. That's right. We got somebody on board with the program, and that is Audible.com. And they're doing something for you listeners that we want to tell you about. For the listeners of the King of Sport podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial just to give you the opportunity to check out the service. Now, Audible is a company that has over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre. You know, they got thrillers, they got business books, romance, comedy, sci-fi, maybe even some comics, graphic novels. But I know Marcus don't mess with that. He's not about that life. If you're about that life, Audible's got it for you. Audible titles play on iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. So if you listen to this podcast, chances are, you know, you live in a mobile world. You live in a mobile society. You're on the go, and you got to have your entertainment and your information portable, and that's what Audible allows you to do. Now, just check out some of the titles that they got. They got The Hobbit, The Autobiography of Malcolm X, The Great Gatsby, 50 Shades of Grey, ladies, and the last season, A Team in Search of Its Soul, which is a great book by Phil Jackson. And you can get all of those titles and more at Audible. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Again, that's audibletrial.com/. Is it slash or backslash?
It's I've heard slash it.
Either or.
Either or.
It's your world, Nate.
It's my world, you know. That's audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport for your free audiobook. Again, big up to audible.com. Check them out. Great service. And they are Down with the Kings. So with that being said, let's step into the world of the NBA. And the proverbial Final Four is upon us in the NBA. And, it's Miami and the Pacers and San Antonio tipping off already. With the Memphis Grizzlies. And let's start out in San Antonio where they gave the Grizzlies a little bit of that Texas two-step, Brother Alfred.
Well, guess what? Nobody cares about San Antonio versus Memphis, and it makes it even worse. It makes it even worse that it's now coming off as a series that's not going to be very competitive, which I don't think it will. I think Memphis is going to get their legs about them. I think they still look like the best team in the West, the most complete team, but the fact that this was a game with Tim Duncan, who everybody thinks is boring, and Memphis, who nobody really knows, in a game that was one-sided, I guarantee you people were tuned out by the first half, if not the first quarter. So this is the worst thing that could have happened for the Western Conference Final.
Yeah, I was so tuned out of the game. I didn't watch it at all. I was at home. I wasn't home, but I was in no rush to tape this game or even go back and watch highlights of this game. I don't understand why people are so quick to write off San Antonio. You know, you're talking about the best coach in the league, arguably, in Greg Popovich. You're talking about a team full of veterans led by Tim Duncan and Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. Going against Memphis team, yes, they are strong inside, but their backcourt, you know, Conley is great, but shooting, in terms of shooting, they really don't have a true jump shooter. You know, Quincy Pondexter is not that jump shooter that you need to really carry you in May and June. So I'm still riding with the Spurs. I'm not sure why there's so much love for Memphis heading into the series.
And, you know, this is one of those kind of situations where, you know, I know Rudy Gay is not a top 10 player, but this is a situation where Rudy Gay's services, you know, would be greatly needed and greatly benefit the Memphis Grizzlies, because the Spurs, they don't need their top guys to, you know, get it going in order to win. You know, we saw that on Sunday. You know, Duncan was, I think Duncan had, what, 6 points?
Yeah.
Ginobili didn't, you know, Ginobili did a great job distributing, but, he, you know, in terms of scoring, he wasn't really up to par. Tony Parker was really the one that was kind of leading that charge. I mean, they got so many guys, you know, Kawhi Leonard, Tiago Splitter, as Stephen A. Smith would say, you know, these role players, and they step up. And I think, you know, I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk for the Spurs. I think it is going to go six, but it would not surprise me one bit if the San Antonio Spurs met up in the let's go ahead and say it, met up with the Miami Heat in the NBA Finals, because I think the Spurs have it. They have what it takes to go for one last run. This is probably their last shot as this group, as it's currently assembled. And, you know, like you mentioned, Pop is one of the all-time great coaches. And, you know, I'll take him as an X's and O's guy against anybody.
Can you imagine the nightmare that would be created if anybody other than the Miami Heat goes to the finals? Like, the Miami Heat get eliminated somehow. The Pacers and the Memphis Grizzlies, or the Pacers and the Spurs, there's nothing. There's nothing the NBA could do or say to get people to tune in.
Oh, you're not looking forward to a 7-game Pacers Grizzly series?
Oh my God!
No!
I know a lot of sponsors weren't looking forward to that.
Let's kind of go ahead and preview the Eastern Conference Finals, which tip off on Wednesday. I don't know why they're waiting so long, but it is the aforementioned Miami Heat and the Pacers. And there was a little bit of controversy. Beef is real, apparently, even if it's manufactured by sports writers, Marcus.
Yeah, so Frank Vogel, he had a line over the weekend that it pretty much said that Miami was just another team. And, you know, the media is good about taking stuff from interviews and sort of playing it to a bigger story. And, of course, word got back to LeBron, who was upset at Frank Vogel and the Pacers for this line that wasn't even accurate. You know, I'm sure LeBron hasn't heard of the actual interview that Frank Vogel did. So this is the media trying to find a way to fill this empty void between the Pacers and Knicks series ending and the start of Pacers heat. So I don't expect much to come from this. You know, LeBron is motivated already. This isn't going to add any, you know, fuel or desire to him. So it's one of those stories that the media is just trying to drum up.
Yeah, you know, because Vogel's actual quote was, you know, they're the next team in our way, which is accurate. Which is, you know,
true.
But
yeah,
the reporter said, Vogel said, you're just another team in their way, which is, I mean, it's a small semantical difference, but, it, you know, the way that the reporter did, you know, it was real kind of disrespectful, and, you know, it was kind of shady in a journalistic fashion. I mean, Brother Alfred, you are no stranger to controversy and sometimes hyperbole in your articles, but, you know, this I don't appreciate what the reporter did in terms of kind of trying to bait LeBron.
Yeah, I mean, see, my controversy is organic. This is 100% manufactured because, let's face it, there's only one team left in the NBA that's interesting. So now it's like the media is in on this conspiracy to just really crank things up and dive for a storyline. And exactly what you guys said is what happened, is that Frank Vogel said, we're just worried about the next team. The Miami Heat are the next team in our way. And LeBron James took this as him saying it's another team. You know what else this could be is maybe LeBron James is looking for some more motivation. You saw how they came out flat against the Chicago Bulls after they looked so good against the Milwaukee Bucks. So now maybe LeBron James is looking to instill some motivation in his team so they don't overlook the Indiana Pacers, which is a team that's going to give Miami some matchup problems with their size.
Yeah, I think, you know, that might be the case in terms of LeBron needing that motivation like Jordan. Jordan would, you know, always take any insult, whether real or perceived, and use that to fuel his fire. But let's be real, fellas. The Heat really don't need that much motivation. I mean, Indiana gave him a run for their money last season. But, I mean, I think if this series goes six games, I'll be surprised.
What's your prediction for the series?
I say Heat in five.
Yeah, I say Heat in five.
I say Heat in six.
All right, so we at least agree on the Heat.
So with the Heat, but what about the West? I think I'm going to go ahead and take the Spurs in six.
I'm going to take Spurs in seven.
Yeah, I'm with Marcus. Give me the Spurs in seven. I think it's going to be a really close series. It's going to be one of those hard-fought lunch pail series.
So it's good. The Kings of Sport are predicting a unanimous sweep. Heat-Spurs final, South Beach versus the Riverwalk.
LeBron gets his revenge from his only, oh no, for a second NBA championship loss. It was actually his first, but he has two career NBA championship losses.
Yeah, both in Texas.
Yeah. But we'll look forward to that. But let's transition real quick from the hardwood to the ice. Stanley Cup playoffs. It's getting real out there. We got to start. You know, I know, you know, we're already into the next round, but we got to go back and look and talk about Toronto real quick. I know we got a lot of listeners up there in Ontario. Oh, my goodness. Toronto with the, I don't know if it was a monumental comeback or a monumental choke job or a monumental comeback and a monumental choke job, but I looked at that and I was just like, oh, Canada.
So snake-bitten.
Before we talk about that, by the way, and just as a side note, I don't even know why I'm telling you guys this, but, you know, I had an idea, right, when I was up in Canada. One of my many harebrained schemes that once I was up there for a while, I was going to write a TV show, a pilot for a TV show, right? Mm-hmm. It was going to kind of be like Martin, but in Canada, like it was kind of be like semi-autobiographical, like the Nate character. I was going to see if I could get Carl Anthony Payne to play Cockroach for the Cosby Show.
He's unemployed, so he's got time.
Yeah, he needs a job. I mean, he does like a lot of those black gospel plays. I was going to see if he played Cole on Martin, obviously. I was going to see if he could play the Nate character. And, you know, he'd be like a DJ, and he's up here adjusting to this new culture with his new girlfriend. And it'd just be a zaniness and everything would occur. And the show was going to be called, Oh, Canada. Anyway, that was a long segue. But get back to the hockey, Brother Alfred.
I just feel so bad for Toronto. The most heartbreaking part of this all is the looks on the fans' faces after they just sat through another heartbreaking loss for the Maple Leafs, who just seem to just want to give away championship runs every single year.
I can't feel too bad for Toronto. I mean, they were happy just to make the playoffs. It's been 9 years. You know, that's a long time between playoff appearances. So, you know, yeah, they choked. You know, what I found more disappointing in the other game seven was Washington's complete choke job against the Rangers. Yes. They were up 3-1 that series. Didn't show up for game seven at all. Lost 5-0. This has been a pattern for the Capitals in terms of losing game sevens into 3-9 overall in game sevens now. So I think what the Capitals did was more damaging for that hockey fan base than what happened to Toronto. Toronto can come back in the playoffs next year, and I think fans will be just happy just for another playoff appearance. But for the Capitals, when you have Ovechkin, you're looking at a bigger issue. Say, where do you go with Ovechkin from here?
Yeah, I think, you know, not only, like you mentioned, not only does it damage the Capitals rep, but Ovechkin as a superstar, you know, is he going to start to get branded, you know, with that kind of label that everybody gave LeBron for a long time? Like, he's a superstar, one of the top 5-10 players in the league, but he can't win the big one, you know.
He's already there.
You know, something that's going to continue to linger on and stick with him. But let's kind of bump around and jump around and talk about a couple of the series going on. First off, Pittsburgh and the Senators. One great game on Sunday. What do you think about that series? I still got to go with Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I'm still going Pittsburgh. I think Pittsburgh in five.
That sounds like a good pick, Alfred.
I like Pittsburgh too. There's a great story out in Boston. I don't know if Boston can get past Pittsburgh, but if they do, that would be a pretty good story with the whole Boston Strong theme going on and the Boston bombings for Boston to make it to the Stanley Cup and win it.
Yeah, I think that was one of the good things, you know, about the, even though the Leafs did collapse, the Bruins, you know, because the Celtics are out and, you know, the Red Sox are kind of being the Red Sox right now, but the Bruins taking that 2-0 lead on the Rangers. I definitely think, you know, they're going to wrap this up sooner rather than later. And if they could find a way to get past, you know, Sid the Kid and Aginla and those boys up in Pittsburgh, I think that would be a wonderful story. Let's bump over to the West, Chicago and Detroit. Who you got?
This is a tough one. I didn't expect Detroit to jump out to this early series lead. I'm still going Chicago. But it's only a matter of time before they go down to the Kings. So whoever comes out of that playoff series, it doesn't matter.
Scary, scary stuff for the Chicago Blackhawks, who for most, if not all, of the season were the best team in the league, and now they're down 2-1 in the series with one more to play in Detroit. I want to take the Blackhawks because I picked them to win the Stanley Cup multiple times since the show started, so I got to stay on that horse, but that horse is looking like a three. It's starting to look like Golden Sense, to be honest.
I
think sorry, Kevin.
Shout out to Devin Critter, who didn't win the Preakness either, but all right, that's all right.
I think Chicago and Detroit, that's a classic rivalry, classic series, but you know, to kind of paraphrase Wesley Snipes from Passenger 57, I always bet on Blackhawks. Finally, to wrap it up, L.A. and San Jose, California series. Who you got?
Kings. But I'm biased.
I got the Kings, too. The Kings blew a golden opportunity to go up 3-0, but that was a thrilling game. The San Jose Sharks are going to have a lot left in their tank, and they're one of those teams that plays so much better at home. A great home field advantage home ice advantage for the San Jose Sharks, but I think the Kings will be able to steal one and win the series.
Game four is a must win for San Jose. If they go back to LA down 3-1, I think it's night-night for San Jose.
Yeah, I definitely think the Kings are going to take that series again. We are down with the Kings, both literally and figuratively, on that series. So that's going to do it for segment one. Stick and stay, though, because we got a great interview coming up next with the winner of the inaugural King of Sport Bracket Challenge. And it wasn't Alfred Cunningham. Brother Jamie Robinson coming up right after the break. More Kings of Sport right after this.
Welcome back to the show that's trending worldwide, from coast to coast and station to station. It's sports talk for our generation. The Kings of Sport, thekingsofsport.com. Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, thekingsofsport.com.
And we're back on the Kings of Sport, and you know what time it is, fellas. Each and every week, we like to bring you a different guest, a new take, somebody that you haven't heard before, and this week is no different. This week, not only is our guest the winner of the inaugural Kings of Sport Bracket Challenge.
Hey, bro.
Hey, haters gotta hate.
Hater.
But he is also a devout fan of old school hip hop. He runs a couple groups on Facebook. As well, he is also a follower of New York sports. So maybe the hip hop, he should stick with the hip hop for now. He is none other than a listener and a fan and a friend of the program. Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for Brother Jamie Robinson.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
What's going on, Jamie? How you doing today, man?
I've been better, been worse. I get by.
That sounds like one of Rex Ryan's mottos.
Too soon.
Yeah, I didn't say anything
too
about
soon, Nate.
Did
too
I?
Soon.
Yeah, too soon. But for the folks out there that might not know, Jamie did have the highest ranked bracket in our challenge. He scored 42 out of a possible 63 picks. He correctly picked the Louisville Cardinals to win. So before we get into all the other stuff we want to talk about today, what was the process behind you picking that bracket? You know, did you really think Louisville had the strongest chance, or were you going with Patino, or were the other teams just not as strong? What was your strategy to get that bracket?
That was the key for me. Was any Patino-led team, you kind of got to get behind. You know, and they're coming in at number one. I had Syracuse coming in against them. Let me see how that worked. That's another New York team went to the crapper. But, you know, that was the key. And I started looking back through them and saying, I don't think anybody else has got them picked.
And, yeah, I took a look at your bracket before we started talking. You did have Michigan making it to the championship. Unfortunately, that didn't pan out for you. But you still did, like we said, you still did better than some so-called experts who are on who are on the air right now that we're not going to mention.
I'm just Marcus. A bum with a dream taking out some people that know what they're doing.
Yeah, he did get
paid to know what they're doing.
He did better than me, that's all right. But he also did better than Alfred there.
He did better than all three
so
of us.
So did everyone.
Especially he did better than Alfred. I think that's the point we want to drive home.
Everybody loves a comeback story. I'm going to come back, and you're going to hear about me winning all kinds of championships over the years. So get used to this, or don't get used to this, but get used to me winning championship going forward.
Yeah, man, it might be in the future, but we're talking about the present right now, and Jamie is the reigning champion. He is the king currently. You know, do you play any other fantasy sports besides doing like the bracket challenge? You into the fantasy baseball, the fantasy football?
Yeah, I play fantasy baseball, one league usually. I play fantasy football, I'm in usually about four leagues. And on the occasion, I'll play fantasy hockey. But, you know, with a short season, I didn't want to get into that this year.
Them's fighting words, Jamie, okay? So I'm going to remember you play fantasy football, and I am giving you a personal open invitation to join our fantasy football league when it does launch, because I'm guaranteeing a win right here and right now at Kings of Sport.
I thought you just said you wanted to win, and the only way you can do that is if you don't invite me.
Hashtag shots fired.
So, Jamie, now you're a New York area sports fan. There's not too much to talk about in New York, not even in the NHL where the Rangers are struggling in their series against the Bruins, but John Tortorella is quickly becoming my favorite person in sports, especially during the playoffs when he's so snippy with the media. He's a soundbite machine. What is it that you don't like? How come he's not your favorite person?
Because he can't run a hockey club. That is, on a microphone, the guy's great. You know, so is Rex Ryan, unless you're a fan. But when you put him on the ice and he's got to manage a team, he doesn't know what the hell he's doing.
Are you saying that because he's maybe not talking about what he's doing? Or what is it that you see? Is it the offensive concerns that they always seem to have?
Well, that's the thing. You know, we're running toward the end of the season, killing it. Offense was everywhere. You know, Hank's going to do what Hank's going to do. You don't have to worry about the defense usually. But, you know, we're putting up 6, 5, 7 goals in a game toward the end of the season, and now we can't get a goal in a game. I don't know if he, you know, I saw the other night Rick Nash finally got my invitation to the playoffs, but, you know, it looked like he wasn't even playing. I figured he needed a personal invitation, so I sent one out in round one, but he didn't get it till round two.
Oh. Where does the Rangers rank in terms of New York sports for fans? Are most people sort of blasé about hockey and the Big Apple?
No, it comes and goes. If you're a hockey fan, that's it. You're a hockey fan. It doesn't matter if you've got 12 games in a season, 60 games in a season, 80, it doesn't matter. And in the, you know, in the 70s, it was all Islanders. That's all anybody wanted to hear was Islanders. The Rangers didn't matter. You know, when you don't win a championship since, you know, 1940, people tend to forget about you. But in 94, it started coming in. Everybody got on board that wasn't a Ranger fan already because we were the only team there. And then, you know, it's split. You don't never wanted to watch a game in Nassau Coliseum unless you were a diehard Islander fan, because the place sucked.
It's a dump.
Yeah. It's no garden. You know, and when you're playing in the garden, that automatically people want to come see you rather than go out to Nassau. But, you know, Buffalo, they don't really matter anyway, so.
Now, I do want to get to some hip-hop, but first, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you, brother. You and Spike Lee, how you holding up after the Knicks loss? I mean, do you think that they maximized all their talent? I think Woods is a good coach, but, you know, that team that is currently assembled, I don't think, you know, they're going to contend with the Heat, much less a physical team like the Pacers.
Well, I tell you, Spike Lee, I'm pretty sure Mookie's out delivering pizzas right now, you know, trying to deal with things. But I stopped watching the NBA in 1995. Mm. When Patrick Ewing was elbow high above the rim and decided he wanted a finger roll, I was done with him.
He had knee problems.
Yeah, and, you know, and I stuck with him past 94 when Starks was 2-for-18. You know, Hubert Davis is on the bench going, "Coach, I can make 3 shots." I made it through, but after 95, I stopped. And I didn't watch, I would say I probably didn't watch a full game until the beginning of this year. I said, you know what, I'm going to give him another chance. And they come through and they break my heart again.
So you say you missed the whole the greatness of the Isaiah Thomas era?
I followed it on the news, and that was more than enough for me. But no, you know, you get J.R. Smith, who's in there killing it, wins the sixth man, and then he comes into the playoffs and forgets how to play ball. You know, Carmelo cannot do it all. Even though he tries to, he cannot do it all.
Okay, so if you had an MVP vote, are you giving it to Carmelo Anthony?
No.
Attaboy.
I am not, you know, I am not the one guy.
Here we go again.
Yeah, no, I have my Syracuse Carmelo jersey. So been a fan a while, but you cannot say, okay, you won the scoring title, so you're MVP. No.
And I have the utmost respect for Aaron Washburn, but I completely agree with that logic, because Carmelo Anthony was essentially a scorer. And now that we get to the playoffs, he was a scorer. No assists. Yeah. Very little rebounds. And you see what's happened when he runs into a team.
Yeah. Somebody who can guard him or stop him, that's all he needed to do. I tell you who I was in love with, though, was Shumpert. That kid did not get enough time.
I've got a bad taste in my mouth for Shumpert, because the soundbite that you always hear when he hits that dunk is utter nastiness. And yes. I believe I do have a trademark on all things nasty.
Nasty.
So they will be hearing from my lawyers.
Plus, how can you not love the kid who's running around with the high top fade?
Yeah.
You know,
you mentioned J.R. Smith. You know, the big story last week and this weekend was the whole Rihanna controversy that Rihanna pretty much put him on blast and said that J.R. is out in the club. And, you know, that's the problem with J.R. Smith, and it's not Rihanna's involvement. What did you make of that whole situation?
I think it was just a mess. There's no need for it. You know, but did you see Pat Ewing running around to scores the night before a playoff game? No.
Pat Ewing wasn't running around with Sade.
Pat wasn't running around with her period.
Oh, yeah. Pat was staying at the hotel. Pat was focused on the game.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know if part of that's got to do with coaching, you know, keeping your guys in place. But, you know, you see how it ended.
Yeah. I still take Woodson over D'Antoni, though.
I would, too, any day of the week.
But I did mention off the top, you know what I'm saying, Brother Jamie is a lover of hip-hop. If you go to his Facebook page, you'll see various pictures. I'm looking at the picture right now while we're talking. He's showing that embrace, that brotherly embrace with Curtis Blow, one of the all-time greats. And he runs two groups on Facebook, like I mentioned, as Occupy Hip Hop. And then there's also Mr. Throwback Thursday. So, you know, let's just kind of get into your love of hip-hop and how it started. And who's some of your favorite all-time artists are?
Who? Well, you know, I grew up in New York. You know, I didn't come down to Virginia until the Navy made me. But, you know, when Yo MTV Raps, huge, huge influence. DJ Red Alert and Chuck Chill Out on Friday and Saturday nights on Kiss FM, that was where all the hip-hop came from. You know, I live probably 45 minutes to an hour out of the city. So you weren't exposed to it every day. But Friday nights, Chuck Chill Out from 9 to midnight, and Red Alert on Saturdays from 9 to midnight, you know, I would just turn it on and just sit there and listen. I would record them every week. You know, and I don't know, the music spoke to me.
You had that radio where you had to hit the record and play buttons
and play at the same time.
Yeah,
and then you got to hit the pause on the commercial. I got the tape still. You know, I was on Twitter the other day and I posted a picture of two of my cassettes. I had one that said Red Alert and one that said Chuck Chill Out on it.
That's how I used to memorize lyrics, is with those cassettes. Is I just rewind them over and over again and play them, and then, okay, that's how he says it.
Yeah, and it worked. There was no internet to look lyrics up on.
Yeah. Now, you said you grew up with MTV Raps in New York, which is mecca of hip-hop, so you sound like you might have, like, a jaded opinion of hip-hop based on the fact that you pretty much grew up in the golden age of hip-hop. So I want you to tell me, when it comes to the current scene of hip-hop, give me one artist who you listen to, who you love, who you absolutely love, and reminds you of the golden age, if any, and one who you just can't stand, or even more, judging by reaction.
We could be here all night.
Yeah.
I have to say, if there was any one MC today that I would actually call an MC, it would be Eminem. You know, the kid's unstoppable.
Absolutely.
You know, his flow is on, his beats are always, you know, Dre's always putting them together, but you know, he is a true MC. You know, he's not just a rapper. You know, now the people that I can't stand are pretty much anybody you can think
Soulja
of.
Soulja Boy 7.
Oh, don't even bring that dude up.
ASAP Rocky?
No.
No Drake?
What's wrong with ASAP Rocky?
No Weezy? Just, no, not for me.
I'm gonna tell you somebody out of the new cast that I do think he's you know, he's not as classic as them old school guys, but out of the current crop, I think he's probably the best of the bunch, and that would be Wale. What do you think about Wale?
See, I don't have. Let's see, I don't listen enough to have an educated opinion. Let's put it that way. There's a lot of stuff out now that when I start to hear it, I go, you know, no, and I'll turn it off. But and growing up in the golden age, you know, I got XM radio and I listen to Backspin. That is my station. I don't listen to anything. I don't listen to anything on the radio. So unless I see him on TV,
yeah,
I'm not, like Lil Wayne, garbage, no talent hack, garbage. And then him and Nicki Minaj was on the Billboard Awards last night. Turn it off.
Yeah. What do you think about what do you think about Jigga?
No. Early. You know, Hawaiian
Soul. Are you a Nas guy? Is that why?
Yes, I am.
Say no more.
How can you not be though?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now I will say this, and I always get heat from my friends for saying this, is that I didn't think Ether was nearly as good as a takeover. I think people made too big of a deal about it. What? And I don't think that Nas won the battle with Jay-Z because I didn't think it was witty enough. I thought it was just him saying all these inflammatory remarks and name calling while the takeover had the punchlines, it had the wittiness and the delivery. I thought the takeover was way better than Ether.
I can't agree either.
That's ludicrous.
No, it was Jay-Z.
Yes.
I
see what you did there.
You know, he's running this route. When Jay was back on Hawaiian Sophie, okay. You know, when you come out and make an album and you call it the blueprint, yeah, when KRS-One already did it and you don't make it better, you're done. I don't even want to hear you anymore. You know, and he's become too much outside of his music now for me to even want to listen to him. You know, he's a talking head anymore.
So pretty much anything, what, after Reasonable Doubts, you don't mess with?
Yeah, pretty much. Yep. No, I had to listen to the, because I'm from New York, song.
Oh, yeah.
Just because, you know. Yeah. Just like when Ja Rule put out that one with him and Joe and, God, who else was on that one with him? Because I'm from New York.
Yeah, I know the song. I just can't.
Jadakiss. That's who that one
was. Yeah,
I don't like any of them. But I listen to it because it's about New York.
Let me,
So you're not, well, you're not a fan of the Lots or Cameron or any of those cats?
No, no. I cut off for the stuff that I really, really get into, I cut off right around 96. Now there's few in between and after that I dug, but 96, that's about my cutoff to stuff that I can say, yes, that's the music I like. You know, a lot of them guys are coming up dead now. You know, Guru, Heavy D,
yeah.
SJ, you know, yeah. MCA.
Dude, to me, really the only, I won't say only, because I do think, I think Kanye's kind of out there. I don't know if I do.
Louis Farrakhan of hip hop?
Yeah, I don't even know if I, because he's kind of even bigger. He's like some type of pop, hip hop.
Yeah.
Crazy phenomenon thing, but in terms of post 96, I'd say pretty much Outkast.
Well, yeah, you can't take away from Outkast. You know, they've come all the way through, and they are who they are. I mean, they don't fit any type of preconceived, you know, stereotype of what hip hop is. They're their own people.
Yeah,
but they put out good music.
Yeah, and that's how you know they're icons, because you can't really classify them as only hip-hop. And even when they do step out, it's not like they're doing something crazy like I think Kanye did with 808s and Heartbreaks. It's not like they're just a complete it's a complete mess. It's actually structured.
Yeah, the only Kanye that I can say that I really like, there's one track, and it was Classics. It was him, Nas.
The Nike song.
Rakim, yeah.
Yeah, Classic.
Yep, that song, he did his verses on there. I said, all right, I can listen to that. I kind of like that one. And then he comes out there and in his kilt and whatever else he's doing.
Like,
he's going.
My favorite bar is where he says, I'm everywhere. You've never been and better than I've ever been.
Never been, yep.
That was hot.
Now, I want to get into a couple quick things before we let you go, Jamie. First thing, you know, you just mentioned a little while ago, stereotypes, and that's one of the things we like to kind of bring up and play with and analyze on this show. And for those up there that might not know, maybe they haven't seen your Facebook page, maybe they can't tell by the baritone in your voice, but brother Jamie is a light-skinned brother, shall we say.
Yeah.
You know, you can even say he was part of the Caucasian persuasion.
I was going to say, I'm a light-skinned brother. So that makes Jamie vanilla-skinned brother, because I doubt that market unlocked.
Yeah, you got the light skins on lock. You and
me and Elder Barge.
Yeah, I was gonna say you and Elder Barge and Christopher Williams.
Man, I want to watch Short Circuit all of a sudden.
But you know, one of the things I kind of experienced when I was in college was you know, because I listened to a lot of different things. I'm kind of eclectic, and you know, I'd listen to the Beatles or the Rolling Stones or Jimi Hendrix. And the funniest thing I always got was when, you know, black dudes would be like, "What you listening to that white boy music for?" And I'm like, you know, Jimi Hendrix is white boy music. I'm like, no, yeah. This is good music. You know, so have you ever, as a listener to old school hip hop, have you ever kind of received, whether it's from white folks, black folks, whatever, like, you know, why are you listening to that for?
I've gotten that, honestly, from day one. You know, when I started coming in singing Roxanne, Roxanne, you know, kids are looking at me going, what? I'm like, what? And I used to get it from both sides when I was young. You know, the white kid saying, you know, why are you listening to that? And the brother's looking at me going, what are you doing listening to this? You know, I'm like, what the hell's wrong with you? It's music, and it's good music.
Yeah.
You know, I went into Fresh Fest a couple years ago. You know, I go to Fresh Fest every year when they have it here. And I walked in there, and, you know, I got my Kango on, I got my shell toes on, rolling in there, and people looking at me like I'm crazy. And then you get up in there, and that was the year they had Special Ed, Dana Dane, Slick Rick, MC Light, and I'm hitting every word, every rhyme, and then they start looking at me again and go, oh, well, okay. You know, it's like, what, because you thought that I didn't understand? I just wanted to dress like this because I saw it on TV one time?
You know, I am hip-hop.
That's exactly the truth. You know, that's what I tell people. I say, rap may be what you do, but hip-hop is what I am.
Yeah, that is a good place to kind of end off. Before we let you go, I do the question this week for the list is your favorite hip hop side hustle. You know, so we talking about like whether that's Jay-Z with Rockaware or Rock Nation, or whether that's you know, Exhibit doing Pimp My Ride or Flavor.
That was a good one.
Doing the Flavor of Love. Do you have a favorite hip hop side hustle, whether it's a movie or a TV show or clothing line, something like that?
Yeah, and it's gonna be a little off the wall. Questlove from the Roots. Mm-hmm. He's a big food guy. And he went and he launched a catering service called Questlove's Food.
Really?
Yeah. Now this is, you know, the Roots are a touring band. I mean, they're everywhere. And then they're on Jimmy Fallon 5 nights a week. I mean, and he still, you know, stepped aside and said, you know what? I love food. I'm going to have a catering business. He don't need to do it. It's not like Vanilla Ice flipping houses. Yeah. That's all he's got to do now. You know, but there was another one. I did check that out, you know, before we came on. And there was one that I did not know about that I had to look up. Swiss Beats.
Yeah.
He's the vice president of creative design and global marketing for Lotus.
What?
That's what I said.
I thought you were going to say his side hustle is Alicia Keys because
That's the one a lot of people wish was their side hustle. But yeah, because I went through and looked at a lot of them. I was like, man, do I go with Jazzy Jeff? When he did a little stint on The Fresh Prince, nah, that wasn't enough. But no, nah, I said, you know, Questlove, you know, cause that's what he does. He said, I play the drums. I'm a DJ. I love food. I think I'll start a catering business. You know,
that's a good one. I hadn't even seen that one. I'm gonna have to check that out after the show.
Yeah, it's called Questlove's Food. He's got two of them, one in New York and one in Philly.
That's crazy. Shout out to Questlove Food. Hey, maybe we can get some cheesesteaks up in here.
Yeah, get Questlove as a sponsor.
but we're going to let you go, Brother Jamie. Just a little heads up, because I know you're going to listen to the show after we get through. Just breaking all the fourth walls. Like, yeah, Jamie's not here the whole show, everybody. But, one of my side hustles later has to do with your boy Melly Mel, so I think you'll enjoy that.
Very, very nice.
But if anybody wants to find your groups on Facebook or see what you got going on Twitter, you know, go ahead and shout it out, and we'll let the people know.
All right, the big one on Facebook is Mr. Throwback Thursday. You know, every Thursday, go out there and catch all the old school videos. You know, we throw out a couple happy birthdays here and there as they come in. And on Twitter, it's @the_Mr_TBT. And, you know, you'd be surprised to see some of the people that follow us.
Yeah, I've been checking that out all week. Like, it seemed like every other day or so, you got somebody new classic following you.
Yeah. It's pretty nice. You know, when Red Alert and Chuck Chill Out are following, that's kind of nice.
You like, come full circle on me. I got the tapes.
Yep, come full circle.
Oh, well, thank you for your time, brother. Thank you for being a listener and a supporter and a fan of the show, man. We are a fan of what you do with the groups. And, you know, you got an open invitation to that fantasy football league, so you can beat down Brother Alfred.
Not gonna happen. Please, dude, please. Shut him up.
You like defeat Rex Ryan's loving.
Well, that was Brother Jamie Robinson. We are the Kings of Sport. And we'll be back right after this.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much. It's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double-digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job. There's a strike at the station. Neon King Kong standing on my back. Can't stop to turn around. Broke my sacroiliac. A mid-range migraine, cancer membrane. Sometimes I think I'm going insane. I swear I might hijack a plane. Don't push me, call, close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My son said, Daddy, I don't want to go to school because the teacher's a jerk. He must think I'm a fool and all the kids smoke reefer.
What's going on, party people and everybody out there in podcast land? It's your man, Nate. And we'll get back to the show in just a little while. But while we got some time, I just wanted to let you guys know the three ways you can get in touch with the Kings of Sport. Way number one, you can tweet us on Twitter, because that's where people tweet people, apparently. You can hit us up on Twitter @KOS_POD. That's CosPod on Twitter. Way number two, you can email us at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. That's thekingsofsport@gmail.com. And finally, you can hit us up on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thekingsofsport. So there you have it. Those are the three ways you can get in touch with us. You can leave feedback. You can join the discussion. Three ways you can be down with the Kings. We good, Marcus? Like, do we have to pay Warren G for this? Because I ain't got G-Funk money.
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
And we're back on the Kings of Sport. You know what time it is, the Ringside Wrap. Each and every week, we bring you the biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. And, this week, we got a little bit of a surprise for the people out there in podcast land. Brother Marcus, lay it on them, please.
Yeah, so our surprise guest falls under the category of someone I haven't met yet in person, but I still consider a cool dude, much like the two co-hosts of this podcast. He's a comedian, actor, writer, host of the Cool Dudes podcast, and the co-host of Never Ever Do This at Home, which debuts on Spike TV May 28th at 11 p.m., Mr. Norm Souza. What's up, Norm?
Guys, Dad, what's going on, guys? Thanks for reading out my resume.
Hey, thank you for joining us on this segment here.
Yeah, I love the podcast, Nate. You're doing great. Marcus, love you. Anyway, that's it, right?
No, that's appropriate, though. We forget about Alfred, so.
Whether or not to call me Alfred. Alfred, you're my favorite one. Thank you. My goodness.
I know, man.
It's fitting. So let's talk Extreme Rules.
Okay.
Last night happened, a pay-per-view. What are your thoughts about it?
I thought it was a really good pay-per-view. I saw a bit of a mixed reaction online, which I think is kind of ridiculous because I thought it was better than WrestleMania. We had a lot of surprises, a lot of young talent winning championships. I thought, the spot with Ryback driving Cena through the LED lights was kind of interesting. I know a lot of people didn't like it because there wasn't really an outcome, but I thought it was good, and I think it's a great way to lead to I'm assuming we're going to get an ambulance match now for if you watch Raw, the beginning of Raw at least. And it's a good way to keep the rivalry between the two of them going.
Yeah, I agree. I think the last two matches were pretty solid, and I especially going to the main event, having some resolution to Brock and Triple H finally after three matches. I think it's finally done, which is always a good thing because it was getting drawn out here.
Absolutely. I think, if you're going to have the sandwich match and Brock Lesnar wins the 2 out of 3, it should be over for that. I don't know what else you could probably do with that feud. But even despite the last two matches, even a match out of, Randy Orton, who was in his hometown, and Big Show, the two of them, you wouldn't think would put on an entertaining match, but they certainly did.
For me, Norm, I thought it was a solid show. I think it was probably middle of the road, thumbs leaning up, it's kind of 6 to 7 out of 10, somewhere in that range. The things that I really liked were, the way they put the Shield over, and these guys have definitely become more of a force on the program. The things I didn't like, though, especially after watching Raw tonight, was there a reason or a purpose for that Del Rio and Jack Swagger match at all?
No, and that was the one letdown because I was figuring leading into the pay-per-view that since we were losing Ziggler that the Del Rio Swagger match would steal the show in some way just because fans might be a little disappointed of not having Ziggler there. Notice how I said steal the show? Anyway, but it certainly did it. It didn't. It wasn't one of the most entertaining matches. I thought that even despite Dean Ambrose and Kofi Kingston being a pretty entertaining match, it could have used a stipulation. Fandango and Jericho could have also used a stipulation. And I kind of agree with the 7. I kind of give it a 7 to 8. But, realistically, for a it is a B, if not C, pay-per-view, the big ones being, of course, WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, Survivor Series, et cetera. And Extreme Rules being a lower level pay-per-view, it was actually quite entertaining and one of the few pay-per-views a year that might have actually been worth the $45.
I'm not looking forward to the Shield title run. I know I'm in the minority. A lot of people celebrating before and now during the fact that the Shield has all the titles, or at least the U.S. title and the tag team titles. And I'll tell you for a couple of reasons. One reason is because WWE tends to beat their champions. Whenever somebody's champion, they feel that that's enough to get them over so they can lose clean. So I'm nervous about that. I'm also nervous about the fact that I'm concerned that if the Shield is this invading stable, and they're supposed to be WWE's resident terrorists who film from undisclosed locations and they enter through the crowd, why are they competing in sanctioned matches for the titles like a good corporate citizen? Why not just steal the titles? Am I crazy to think that?
No, it is definitely a logic flaw that you're pointing out, and I don't love the push either, and I didn't really love the push with Ryback so quickly as well, because you have a lot of these NXT superstars who are unproven pay-per-view draws, and especially with the Shield's dynamic, how they're this rogue group who kind of, you know, comes through the crowd. I get the logic flaw on that. It is nice to finally see, I would like to see another member join and kind of solidify the group before and maybe bring in another title. I do like seeing a stable winning championship belts with a little bit of lasting power. I just don't love that these guys are not proven draws. You know, they're not really that familiar with the younger fan base, let's say. But, you know, you have to admit that having a strong faction at any time, I'm not talking Nexus here, but, you know, having a strong faction that can dominate, you know, at least the mid-card, it will definitely help the mid-card and maybe support the main event roster, you know, especially they've been dabbling in the main event the last little while, but I think Dean Ambrose with the U.S. title could definitely legitimize that. And Rollins and Reigns having the tag title is a great way to, you know, to move that tag title to another team like the Primetime Players or Road Scholars, who aren't really a tag team anymore, but Tons of Funk. Those teams that were unrealistic to defeat Hell No have a chance against Rollins and Reigns.
Looking ahead to the next pay-per-view on the dock, which is Payback, the talk is going to shift towards, is CM Punk going to return for that Chicago pay-per-view? If you were booking WWE, what would you do with CM Punk in terms of bringing him back for this show?
Oh, you know, you'd think that he would have to interfere in the Ryback Cena match, but, you know, is Brock Lesnar having a match? You know, it's tough to say where you put him right now. The one thing that I'm a little worried about is WWE has a tendency right now to have a lot of rematches on pay-per-views, and at least that 3 pay-per-view headline, like Del Rio faced Big Show 3 times, Sheamus and Big Show fought multiple pay-per-views. Now we're getting Ryback and Cena for what? This is the 3rd or 4th pay-per-view that those two have headlined?
3rd, yeah.
Well, because they had the Hell in a Cell match, Triple Threat. They had this will be Payback, and the one before that was they just had was Extreme Rules. So this will be the 3rd.
Survivor Series Triple Threat.
Payback. It's already established that, you know, in the name that there's going to be some rematches. So I hope we don't get another Fandango Jericho match. You know, I'm assuming we're going to get, if Dolph Ziggler is better, Dolph Ziggler, Alberto Del Rio, which I'm actually kind of looking forward to, because everyone expects Ziggler to lose, and hopefully he won't. But I hope that the trend of rematches kind of goes away. With CM Punk, it's tough because he's coming off fighting The Undertaker, who's gone now. You know, I don't really know where you put him unless he costs Cena the match and, you know, Ryback wins the title. But I kind of find that unlikely.
And see, to me, I think a good way to go would have been to give us a definitive finish last night, and maybe by hook or by crook have Ryback win that, and then you could set up Ryback and Punk in Chicago to give. See, because Cena, you know, the guy needs a break to refresh the character. You know, I know he's the golden goose, he brings in all the dollars, but, you know, they got to start rotating some of these other guys in and giving Cena a break, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. Cena can definitely use some time off. I think it would be a great program for WWE to kind of think about is, you know, Triple H is kind of stale right now, and he's coming off losing to Brock Lesnar. But I think that CM Punk and Triple H could draw. I think that they could headline the pay-per-view and it would work.
As long as they keep Kevin Nash out of it.
Oh, my goodness. Please keep Kevin Nash out of everything. That should be on a T-shirt.
No cell phones or anything.
No, nothing.
Yeah, no texting. Yeah, no.
What are your long-term projections for Big E Langston?
It's tough to say. He's a monster, and watching him on NXT, you know, he's kind of, his character is a little different. He's a little more charming. He's a witty, smart, funny guy. I think he's going to be very versatile. I can definitely see him. I don't really see him as a world champion yet, but I couldn't imagine him with any other title in the next calendar year. So, long term, I think he has a very good chance. I think he could be the next, you know, if you're going to stick to African American wrestlers, I don't know if he's going to be the next Rock, but he can definitely be the next Ron Simmons or something like that. I don't know. I would love to see Big E Langston and Ryback in a main event. I think that would be amazing.
Let's, you know, kind of getting to that. I just thought of another guy that, you know, Alfred and I had been talking about that they could have done something with if you wanted to give Ryback some fresh feuds, you know, because Mark Henry beat him at WrestleMania, and, you know, they just did the thing with Mark Henry pulling the two tractor trailers or whatever it was. There was no reason for, one, I don't think there was a reason for him and Sheamus to even have a match in the first place, but two, they could have easily put Henry over and worked him into something with Ryback. I think, you know, the matches would have been god-awful, but it still might have been something fresh and something different.
Yeah, and the match at WrestleMania was surprisingly good. And, you know, all the feats of strength the past month have been really impressive. And, you know, I don't want to say that Mark Henry's been misused. He has been over the years, but the run, his world championship run before his injury was unbelievable. You know, he looked unbeatable. So I think if they try to rekindle that Mark Henry is this dominant force who can't be stopped against Ryback, who is clearly right now this unstoppable force, I think those two colliding in the main event with, like, the world title on the line, which is kind of weird because you don't want Ryback to jump into that world title picture now that he's in the WWE Championship picture, but yeah, I still feel like Mark Henry and Ryback had at least another show in them.
We'll get you out of here on this. One of the discussion points we've been talking over the last couple of weeks has been The Rock, and will he come back, and if he's been good for the company. If you had to say it right now, do you expect The Rock to come back to WWE at some point in the future?
No, I don't think so. I think if he does have another match, it'll be in maybe... if he does have another one, it'll be in maybe 2 years. He has said that he will be at next year's WrestleMania. I could see him like he did, you know, a couple WrestleManias ago. It was 27, Miz and Cena when he was a social media ambassador. You know, these movie production companies have too much money invested in him, and if he's going to tear out his, you know, pelvis muscle, and he, you know, the Hercules movie is going to be delayed, and there's too much money riding on him, and if he does get injured in the ring, it costs a lot of studios, you know, a lot of money with these blockbuster movies that he's making. So I don't think he's going to take the chance in the next 2 years. I think after 2 years, when his Hollywood star cachet starts to fade, maybe he'll come back and have a match. But in the next 2 years, based on the injury at WrestleMania, I think it's very unlikely that he comes back.
Well, Norm, thanks for popping in and talking some wrestling with us, brother. Before we let you get out of here, let the people know how they can follow your work, how they can keep up with you, and also plug your new show, man.
Yeah, you can watch me on Spike TV starting May 28th on Never Ever Do This at Home. That's Tuesdays at 11. You can follow me on Twitter, at Norm Souza, and if you want to get my wrestling tweets, it's at Hacksaw J Duggan.
All right, I told you, we got surprises each and every week. That's why you got to keep coming back and listening to this show, because this podcast is like a box of chocolates, and I'm not saying that just because we're black. Yeah, you never know. You never know.
I'm butterscotch.
Nobody was saying that, Nate.
there's always that piece of white chocolate in there. That's me.
Yes. Oh, but that was Norm Souza. We are the Kings of Sport. We'll be back with segment 4 right after this. Drink, rice, monkey, here's how you feel. You put your leg down. You're right, lad.
I have the Florida Gators winning it all. I don't want to finish this thing at dead last.
Don't send this man a t-shirt, America. The man asking for a t-shirt 5 minutes ago, and he turned his back on the Eagles. Hey, come on.
I'll go.
They may argue. They may disagree. They may not always see eye to eye. But through it all, they're still the kings of sport. Join the discussion at facebook.com/thekingsofsport.
And we're back on the Kings of Sport. You know what time it is. The often imitated, never ever quite duplicated segment 4. About to give you guys the scenario, some of the hottest topics in the world of sports and entertainment. And it seems to be a recurring theme. I mean, stop me if you heard this before, guys. We have a gay athlete who is dealing with, you know, just the kind of the, I don't know if you call it the pressures or the fallout of coming out. And, you know, Brittany Griner, back in the news. Brother Marcus, what's going on with Sister Brittany?
Yeah, so Brittany Griner, who's now in the WNBA, which kicks off next weekend for all you WNBA fans out there.
Go Sparks!
Yeah, sure. it came out this week that Brittany was told to keep quiet about her sexuality when she was at Baylor. And the reasoning behind this was that they were trying to protect her. And, you know, Baylor is a Baptist university, as we mentioned on the show. So coming out, especially when you're the best college basketball player in the country as a woman, would have been a tricky situation for the school, and also for the coach, Kim Mulkey. So, you know, there's two sides of the argument. There's one side that's trying to say that says, you know, the school's looking out for her best interest. And the other argument is that the school was scared to have this openly gay athlete. So what are your thoughts, guys?
Well, I think I'm not the biggest fan of religion. A lot of people know that. But when it comes to Baylor, I think it's an unfair rap that this is all coming out now. So because it's like, of course the school isn't going to trumpet the fact that they have a gay athlete, because Baylor is a Baptist university. And really, for people to come down on the school because of that after the fact is a little bit unfair in my eyes. I think Brittany Griner really should know what she's getting into by going to a school like Baylor, given her sexual issues, especially knowing that they're going to go out and try to recruit people under their own quote-unquote moralistic values.
Yeah, and you know, I do kind of feel bad for Brittany in one sense, because, you know, nobody should be able to tell you how to live your life and to be something or somebody that you're not. But by the same token, like Alfred was saying, you know what you sign up for. I mean, it's like a year or so ago when a kid was at BYU, I forget his name, but he got the girl pregnant and he had to suffer the penalty. You know, if you go to a school that is a religious university, a religious institution, you know, you kind of got to go by the lay of the land. Like, you know, if let's just say there was a Nation of Islam university and I decided to go there, you know, I can't get mad if they see me out partying and drinking and smoking and eating bacon sandwiches and dancing with white women. That's
wait, hold on. Wait. Time out, 20-second time out.
This sounds like my weekend a couple weeks ago.
What would the mascot be of this college?
The Nation of Islam mascot. Oh.
It would be Kareem. It would be a big statue of Kareem.
The bow ties?
Yeah. Oh, the bow ties.
Of a bean pie?
Bean pie.
The Panthers. It'd be the Panthers.
It would be the Panthers,
the,
I think.
The Black Panthers. The Malcolm State Panthers. So let's see. Let me take out the checklist. So we done pissed off the gay people, the religious people, and the Nation of Islam.
They're the most dangerous, by the way.
Yeah.
I got my daily call right here on my desk. I'm good.
At least the most militant. I mean,
yeah.
But getting back to Brittany, like you know, I mean, you know, going to that analogy. But you know, you got to know what you're getting into. And again, you know, it's I mean, there's people kind of taking shots at Kim Mulkey and taking shots at university. I can kind of see that because, you know, in 2013, everybody's like, you know, it's time to get past this stuff. But by the same token, this is a religious university, and it's their school, their rules, you know. And so I kind of see both sides of the argument.
And Baylor has a their student policies and procedures. There's a statement on human sexuality. And it basically says, you know, we don't condone anything that goes against the Bible. So, you know, homosexuality clearly goes against the teaching in the Bible. So I think, you know, I think Coach was actually looking out for Brittany's best interest there.
Yeah, I think so too. But I was going to add something, but I'm still kind of getting back to that image of me at Malcolm State University eating a bacon sandwich and dancing with the white women and smoking and drinking.
So it would be an HBCU, right? It would be in the SWAC. Or the it'd be a definitely SWAC school.
I don't know. Maybe in the MEAC somewhere.
A 2-win football program and basketball team that.
Hey, we got a hell of a band, though.
Oh, I'll believe that. See, I'd pay to go see the band.
Playing Public Enemy songs,
fighting power, dancing, marching.
Oh, but I mean, just kind of put a bow on that. I mean, again, a couple weeks ago, we gave Brittany props for, you know, doing what she did, and we still stand by that. But at the same token, you know, to the people that's kind of taking shots at Kim Mulkey or taking shots at the university, you know, this is still America. And, you know, as much as, you know, people get on religion for being closed-minded and being, you know, reluctant to change or reticent to change. By the same token, you know, you have to have that respect for something that they've already got set up. You know, you might not agree with it, but if you know what they're doing going in and they don't try to hide who they are or what they believe or what they do, then, you know, you don't have to agree with it. You don't have to like it, but, you know, it is what it is. But something that I liked, and I know Alfred liked, I don't think Marcus saw it, is something that leads us to our second King for a Week recipient. Of course, we debuted this award last week during segment four and gave it to the Honorable Brother Charles Ramsey. I don't know why I just made him a member of the Nation of Islam all of a sudden.
Because he's black.
we're going to make that a promo somewhere. That's because he's black. But Brother Alfred, this week's King for a Week, let the people know who's been dropping it like it's hot.
Uh-oh.
I think we may have lost Brother Alfred.
Hand down.
So we're going to vamp and just talk until Alfred comes back.
I'm sorry, the call dropped.
Man, have you switched your plan yet?
We're keeping this on the podcast.
Are we really live with this?
Keeping it real, man. Okay, Alfred got that prepaid Skype.
I've got that Getro going on. Okay, so you guys have been vamping, but all right, I'm just gonna get into my spiel here.
Go for it.
I know last week we had Charles Ramsey as the King for a Week. This individual has won a few more awards than Charles Ramsey, including Grammys and Soul Train Awards, and he's about to add another award to his collection, not because of his sheer talent, which I do believe he's talented, but because I just feel very sorry for him, and I hope you guys too do too, because he had the accident of the millennium at the Billboard Music Awards, where right into his set, it was a smooth set, he was doing a great job performing his award-nominated song, Adorn. At the peak, he jumps up, tries to scale the crowd and do the splits, but instead, he landed the most accidental and brutal-looking leg drop on two women that you've ever seen. And if you see it in slow motion, one of the girls' head bounces right off of the ground. So my man, King for a Week this week, none other than a poor man's Bruno Mars, but a very talented man nonetheless, Miguel.
Yeah,
I know you didn't see this, but you got to take a look at this.
Yeah, I did see it last night. I was at Disneyland yesterday, so I was going through Instagram, and I see this photo of Miguel and Shawn Michaels in a ring, and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And so I had to Google it, and I found the clip, and I showed it to my girlfriend, and we started cracking up at Miguel's awkward attempt to jump, and it was, I'll say this, if the guys at Botchamania had any sense of humor. They would include Miguel in the Nets version of Botchamania because it was that bad.
Let me tell you something. Like, this hit me on so many levels, okay? Let me take you on the journey that was Nate watching this set at the Billboard Awards. Okay, so first of all, Adorn is a great song, and it was a song that was kind of special to me and my ex. So I'm just sitting there with the memories flooding back, and I'm just dancing in my chair. It's a good set, and then all of a sudden, I see the brother just kind of step back like he about to do something, and I'm like, black dudes usually don't stage dive, especially when they R&B singers, and especially when they wearing like Prince heels. That's not a good look. And then I saw him take off and run, jump over the crowd from one stage to another stage, land on this lady's head. The lady sister hit her head on the stage, fell down. Now all of a sudden, this blonde chick come up from behind, and Miguel is hugging on her, and whoever the dude was next to him, he just, the best part about it was the show had to go on. He hit the lady with the leg drop, fell on, like, I don't know, even if the people weren't there, that would have been a bad jump for Miguel, because he landed, like, on his tailbone, but still, he was able to hug the white woman, dap up the brother that was kind of androgynous right next to him, and keep on the, keep on with his song. And so that, if that's not king worthy, I don't know what is, Alfred.
It's very admirable that he kept on keeping on, and he was clearly rattled by what had just happened. And who wouldn't be? I mean, he just landed that terrible, horrific
maneuver. He wasn't as rattled as that chick that hit her head on the stage, though.
Oh, her head was rattled for sure. Her brains were rattled. I was rattled. And he tried to finish the notes, and he's a very good singer, but you could tell that he was just off. And at the same time, he's trying to apologize and hug the girls who are horrified at this point. And it was just a mess. It really was. But what's funny about this is that we have the internet. So now, as Marcus was saying, you see all these memes. And you also see on YouTube to where Jim Ross, they're dubbing his call over the Miguel incident. If you haven't seen this, it's hilarious. I think it's a call from WrestleMania when Jeff Hardy or Matt Hardy jumps, does actual leg drop on somebody through a table. And they have that same sound effect. So go and look that up.
I think if Miguel was smart, Marcus, he would just start incorporating this into his shows. Just hitting leg drops and maybe stepping up the ante. And you remember that move Sabu used to do when he put the chair in the corner?
Yeah.
And he would run and jump. And maybe Miguel should start adding stuff like that to his concerts.
Triple jump.
If you had to compare his leg drop to a wrestler, who would you pick?
I think it was better than Hogan's.
Me too. I think it was better than Cena's. It was very athletic. I would put him up there with Fandango, who's got a very electrifying top rope leg drop.
I think this was kind of, I'd go even a step further and say this is Jeff Hardy worthy.
Yeah.
There you go.
Because, I mean, I'm sure he rehearsed it, but when he rehearsed it, I'm sure he had on some clothes that fit and some sneakers. But when he did it at the Billboard Awards, he had on some tight clothes and some, like I said, some Prince boots. By the way, Prince getting the Icon Award, big up to Prince. But when he hit that lady with the leg drop, man, it was the most horrifying and hilarious thing at the same time. So Miguel joins the ranks of Charles Ramsey as a king for a week, as recognized by the Kings of Sport podcast. So big ups to you, Miguel. I think that lady going to get broke off, though, fellas. She's got video evidence. She's
got it on camera.
She's got memes, so she's going to get some money.
It's not even the worst concert disaster I've seen in person a long time ago. 2002, right after 9/11, I was at a show in New York that was for 9/11 victims and all that, and it was a concert. The concert that featured Jay-Z and the Roots, and we were sitting in the front row, me and my best friend, and we were sitting right next to the stage, and there's two speakers that were stacked on top of each other. The top speaker ended up falling and landing on this girl's leg. And you talk about a noise you don't want to hear. Oh boy. And this was, you know, before the cell phone era with video, so there was no, you know, video proof of it. And the funny thing was, well, not the funny thing, but the sad thing was, Black Thought and Questlove sort of looked over, saw what happened, and he kept performing. You know, this girl was writhing in pain. And
he was probably thinking about his catering business.
Yeah, so shout out to the girl who took the speaker on her lid in New York.
The 9/11 speaker girl.
Yeah, shit, yeah, so.
Oh, man.
Concerts, man, don't get hurt. It's rough out there.
Yeah, that's a good way to wrap it up. Concerts, they're dangerous. But one thing that isn't dangerous is the list. And coming up next, we got a list that features your favorite hip-hop side hustles. So we got our picks. We got some feedback from you guys out there. And we're going to share it coming up next on the Kings of Sport. Be right back. How we keep it coming in. KRS and Puff again, the pushing and shoving in. The neighborhood be bugging when we coming in. Ruling.
With more Wildcast than Rick Pitino, I mean.
Just cooling. Like Levert, I do work. They love me. Big West G, Simone Puffy. Young, black, and educated. That's how we made it. Study and bring the money in. You can't debate it. The scholar gets the dollars. While these other scholars just. Got an opinion you want to share with the Kings? Well, have your say in one of three different ways. Visit Facebook.com/TheKingsOfSport. Email us at TheKingsOfSport@gmail.com and hit us up at CosPod on Twitter.
I'm expressing with my full capabilities, and now I'm living in correctional facilities. Cause some don't agree with how I do this. I get straight and meditate like a Buddhist. I'm dropping flavor.
Every day I'm hustling, 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 every day I'm, every day I'm, every day I'm hustling, every day I'm hustling.
Welcome back to the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop with another exciting edition of the list. And this week, as you can hear by the music in the background, we talking about that hustle. We talking about hip-hop hustle. We talking about your favorite side jobs that a rapper does. Now, this could be a TV show, a movie, clothing line, a sporting firm. Master, shout out to Master P. You know, anything that a rapper does that's not focused primarily on the mic, that's his side hustle. And that's what we gonna get into today. And I think I'm going to kick things off this week, fellas.
Go for it.
So here's my top three all-time hip-hop hustles. First of all, I'm going to get this one out of the way because it's not really funny. Like, all our answers ain't got to be funny all the time. Listeners out there, I don't know why you expect us to be clowns and dance for your amusement.
We are not Brodus Clay.
We do not
shuck and jive.
Not shuck and jive.
Not Sambo dolls.
Can I have a serious answer for the sake of being a serious answer? And I'm going to go with Outkast Clothing Company. I used to love their gear back in the day when I was in high school and when I was in college. I thought they made some creative clothes. Obviously, if you've seen the way Outkast dresses, you know that some of the stuff was more Andre influenced. Some of the stuff was more Big Boy influenced, but it all had that style, had that swagger. You know, I think they're out of business now, but you can still probably go on eBay or some of them hustle sites on the internet and pick you up some Outkast clothing. But they did a great job. I think them and Wu Wear were probably my two favorite hip hop themed clothing suppliers. Now we're gonna get to the funny. My number two choice is a reality show that set the bar for all other reality shows, and it set the bar low. Talking about the Flavor of Love. Anytime you got Flavor Flav, you know you're going to be in for some shenanigans. You're going to be in for some foolishness, some trifling stuff out there. But it's going to be entertaining. It's going to be funny. Now, you take Flavor, of course, legendary hype man for Public Enemy, and you add to the mix about 15 or 20 scandalous skeezers, skip, scop, scallywags, hee-haws, hooly-hoos. Basically, trifling women that's just out there to get on TV. Ain't none of these women really love Flavor Flav, even though they told you in their little confessional pieces that they love Flavor. And, you know, I mean, I think Flavor of Love lasted three seasons, but there was some key females that you had to remember over the years. Of course, there was New York. Everybody knows New York. She was the one that got spit in the face, Pumpkin spit in her face, and New York took Pumpkin's head and bashed it into the camera. New York was a good character. Pumpkin was a good character. I don't even remember the girl's name, but there was one girl that, let's just say, left a present on the floor in
she
one of the
took
flavors.
A shit on the floor.
Yes,
on TV. That happened, folks.
Boom. That really happened, folks. In the year 2012 or 2011, but it wasn't that far away. It wasn't like they didn't have toilets.
Are you sure that wasn't just Flavor Flav taking a nap?
No, that was one of his quote unquote women. The other thing I liked about Flavor of Love is every now and then they would bring Brigitte Nielsen in. And y'all remember Brigitte and Flavor Flav had that little thing, that little relationship, and they would bring her in. And, you know, you just got this big, tall Larry Bird-looking woman and this little Daffy Duck-looking dude. And, you know, it's just comedy gold. So Flavor of Love is my number two. And now, I teased it earlier. I told Jamie my third side hustle was going to have to do with Melly Mel. Rah! That was the worst Melly Mel impersonation ever.
It wasn't too bad.
No, it was all right. But have you ever, speaking of Melly Mel, you ever seen the Chappelle Show Lost episode of the season 3, I guess? The DVD where he had Melly Mel, he did like an MTV Cribs?
No.
And the joke was Dave Chappelle was like, I'm so rich, I got Melly Mel on retainer just to punctuate my sentences, you broke bitches. And he'd be like, check it out. Like, baby, I want a sandwich. Then Melly Mel would pop up and be like, rah! He'd be like, I think I'm going to the cleaners right now. he did one at the end where he was like, that's fine. You guys can get out of my house now. Rah! And then he just took a step back and Melly came back in. Rah! And he's like, I gave y'all that one for free, baby. So, I've always loved Melly Mel as a rapper and also as an entertainer. But when Melly Mel got involved with the Urban Wrestling Federation as a promoter, as a manager, as somebody that did music for the Federation. I mean, the Urban Wrestling Federation was something, and this is something that really, you know, I guess it's still going on. The website's still up, but I guess its heyday was last year. And, you know, they got some talented dudes on the roster, Eddie Kingston, Homicide, some guys that have been in ROH, but they got rappers as their managers. And, like, each rapper has a clique, has a set, has a crew of about five wrestlers. And they manage against each other. So it's like, uh-oh, Grandmaster Flash is coming after Melly Mel. Uh-oh, it's Cool Herc. What are you doing, Cool Herc? Put that chair down, Cool Herc.
I have a great idea, Nate.
Yeah.
You know what we need to do? We need to call John Way, and we all need to review the UWF, one of the shows.
Yes.
Yes, that is. I'm actually writing that down right now as we speak.
This needs to happen.
It'd be the five of us reviewing UWF. Yeah, that is that crossover needs to happen.
Yeah.
But so that's my list. I got Outkast Clothing Company, The Flavor of Love, and Melly Mel and the Urban Wrestling Federation. So what do you think about that list, fellas?
That's a strong list. It's very outside the box. It's unpredictable. You made it very exciting. You're very convincing. And I'm sorry, but Flavor of Love was my guilty pleasure for a few years. And I look forward to the reunion shows. There was nothing like it. That's when it was all out, leave it all on the floor, Royal Rumble type stuff.
And you know the best part about the reunion shows was because they would always bring back the girl Flavor picked, and then the guy would be like, so, Flav, how's it going? We broke up, boy.
You love me?
Because the first girl that won Hoops, like, didn't she end up dating like Ron Artest or somebody?
Shaq.
Yeah.
Shaq.
She's married to Shaq.
They got married.
I don't know if they're married. But they were dating they still might be dating for all I know. I'm not up on my Shaq relationship news.
You can't marry Flavor Flav's seconds, man. Can't
not
do that,
all.
Shaq.
Not at all. And that show generated some spinoffs. I mean, that's how, you know, popular this show was. That it's just,
I Love New York, Charm School.
For the records, it's all VH1. This isn't BET that was airing this stuff. This was VH1.
No, BET had great shows like Tiny and Toya, keeping it together.
About family.
Oh, so that's my list. Brother Marcus, let's hear your three favorite hip-hop side hustles.
All right, number three, speaking of TV, Run's House.
Who's House?
Run's House. Featuring, of course, Rev Run of Run DMC. This was a MTV reality series that went on for several years and also generated a short-lived spinoff. But I found the show fascinating because we got to see, this might be a stretch here, but I think the closest we've seen since The Cosby Show in terms of a black family
with you know, a middle class family, of course, with Rev Run, and you know, they didn't fit into that, you know, stereotype, you know, quote unquote black family. They were doing well. Their kids went on to do great things, even though some were in trouble. JoJo, but we got to see how Rev, you know, raised his family up, and it was a good insight to see what a rapper's family really looks like. So, number three in my list, Run's house. Number two, Vitamin Water, 50 Cent. This was, I'm a huge supporter of the Vitamin Water. It it's much better than that regular water that's for free. Way better than Gatorade. Gatorade's gross.
I agree.
But, you know, not only was this a great move from 50 Cent, he made lots of money off this Vitamin Water deal. I don't know what his involvement is currently, but I know, you know, when he first got in, he got paid off this. So I think it really showed that 50 Cent was more than a rapper. He was a businessman. He was a mogul, and he was sort of like Diddy. He was looking always for other revenue streams, revenue incomes, and this was definitely one of them. So number two, Vitamin Water. And number one on the list is Luther Campbell, and it's his coaching job that he's doing in Miami with U football. He's been profiled recently on Real Sports, and he has really made an impact to the kids in South Florida in terms of getting them off the streets and getting them enrolled in this football program. His Pop Warner team is, I guess, whatever the equivalent to AAU for football, has turned into a bit of a national powerhouse. And he's had several guys who've gone on to get Division I college football scholarships. And it really shows you that, you know, Luther Campbell, despite his shenanigans in the 80s and 90s in terms of Two Live Crew and all that, he has a heart deep down inside. And he's really, you know, willing to give back to the kids. So number one on my list is Luther Campbell and his side hustle in terms of coaching youth football in Miami.
I can see Uncle Luca on the sideline trying to coach his receivers. Pop that curl route. Pop. So Marcus had Run's house, Vitamin Water, and Luther Campbell coaching. That's a solid list. I am a supporter of Vitamin Water too. I'm drinking some right now. But what you think about that, Alfred?
I really like that list too. 50 Cent is obviously the one that stands out. He's one of the greatest hustlers, not only in hip hop, but I would say in American society, at least for this generation. The guy has taken, yes, boxing promotions as well, and he's one of those people who made way more money outside of hip hop than he did within hip hop, which is good because he had his run, but his run is obviously over in rap.
I think he had a video game out. He's got the energy drinks now.
He had some movies out. He's a sharp dude. He's a sharp dude. Don't let that whole 7 gunshots, 8 gunshots fool you. Like, he is a sharp dude.
I would tell you, actually, one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, it was on VH1 where they traced 50 Cent's roots. And they went back and like, his family was slaves, obviously. And if you go back far enough, most black people's families are descendants from slaves.
I was a house Negro, by the way, for the record.
Let's see.
Just Master took care of me.
Judging by skin tone, Marcus was in the house with the lemonade. Alfred was out.
Alfred, man. Woo, he was Kunta, man. He was out next to Kunta.
My fingers were still bleeding.
Alfred was deep in the field. Like, I was at the edge of the field where I could still see the house. Alfred was damn near in the forest.
I'm telling you, man. You got to get your workout somehow, right?
Oh, but speaking of Brother Alfred, what's your list of your favorite hip-hop side hustles?
Well, let's start with a guy who a lot of people don't take very seriously, but really proved to me that he is one of the smartest guys in all of hip-hop and entertainment, and that's Lil Jon. That's right, Lil Jon has been on 2 seasons of Celebrity Apprentice. Most people in mainstream America think that all Lil Jon can say is, yeah, what? And okay, and that's what his vocabulary is limited
pretty
to.
Pretty good.
But this guy, in both seasons of Celebrity Apprentice, got all the way to the Final Four, to where he was in that final round of people who got fired, to where they had to be evaluated. He won task after task as a project manager, a very good director, a very good marketing mind, and a guy who also has side hustles like Crunk Juice and a winery, if you would believe me or not, that's called Little Jonathan Winery. It's out in California. So Lil Jon, a very sharp businessman that really kind of creeps up on some people because he just kind of looks like a buffoon sometimes with the glasses and the grill, but a very smart guy. Shout out to Lil Jon. Also, let's go with the guy who was mentioned on this show today, and that's Eminem. Eminem is the guy who starred in really what was the most successful hip-hop movie of all time. I can only think of more. 8 Mile made over $116 million at the box office domestically, over $240 million worldwide off of only a $41 million budget. People, he's also got his own clothing line, Shade 45, the radio company. That's actually a really good radio station. He's got Sway in the Morning. It's one of my favorite radio shows there. And so Eminem, a very good side hustler, great MC, arguably, and in my eyes, the greatest rapper, lyrically, MC of all time. And he's also got a lot of side hustles. Yes, yeah, we can have that conversation.
We can have that conversation.
We can have that conversation.
Yeah, that'll be a future episode.
Yeah.
Number three, and I'm also right about this, is that LL Cool J has got to be the father of the side hustling hip hop. Now, this is another one of my favorite rappers. He's really the guy that got me hooked to rap. You know, there are guys like Criss Cross and Coolio that I kind of listened to, and I liked hip-hop, but LL Cool J really made me love hip-hop, and he's a guy who also went out and got into the acting career. He was on a show called In the House alongside Carlton Banks and Alfonso Ribeiro, and that show actually drew 11 million people in its first season. It was Emmy-nominated
for
Light Direction. You know, yeah, Light Direction.
It was a great show.
It was an alright show. I mean, I didn't love it. It was a poor man's Fresh Prince, but it lasted four seasons. They got what they could out of it, and then the throne was over once it went from 11 million people to about 2.8 million people, so that's not very good. But LL Cool J can still be seen on TV on Law & Order. He's had a recurring role for a very, very long time. He also still does concerts, and he's been in a lot of movies. He was alongside Queen Latifah in a movie. It wasn't a very good movie.
I mean, CSI, by the way.
Was it last time?
It's NCIS.
All those shows in Law & Order, NCIS, CSI, something with initials, SVU. I don't know. He's on a show about crime that has initials, okay? Aren't they all the same thing?
No, I'm telling you, it's NCIS.
Los Angeles, yeah. You're right.
They've got to start making all this stuff. Okay. So they've got LL Cool J, Lil Jon, and then my man, the greatest rapper of all time, and Eminem. What do you guys think of all that?
Fred, I'm going to start first because let's get back to In the House, because to me, you may have said it was like a Fresh Prince kind of Fresh Prince light, but to me it seemed, because if I'm remembering the premise right, LL was a fitness instructor,
right?
And who was the woman on the show?
It was a Wayans, right? It was Kim.
Kim Wayans.
Kim Wayans.
And he kind of ended up being like her manny, like he was the fitness instructor, but he also helped her around the house, right? So it was basically a little bit of Fresh Prince, but to me it was more just like Black Who's the Boss.
That's pretty much what it was like, and they used that same formula, however, for Fresh Prince, where there was an adversarial relationship between LL Cool J and the Carlton character, and he was playing the same guy. Alfonso was playing the same dude as he did in Fresh Prince, and LL Cool J was in the Will Smith role, where he was a cool rapper type dude. And it worked. It worked for a little bit. It was a winning
John
formula.
Amos was on the show from Good Times.
He was. Yeah, but it just slowly but surely drowned it out.
it worked. And you mentioned the ratings. You said 11 million people. Just to put that in comparison, you know, considering that there's a lot of lack of diversity on network television, you know, Scandal is the hot show on network TV. Their finale didn't draw 11 million viewers. It only drew 9.1 million viewers. So if you compare what Scandal is doing now, that which is the quote-unquote hot show, compared to a show in the 90s, in your house.
A mid-level show in the 90s.
Not even a good show, just a sort of, you know, a CW, UPN type show, which did 11 million people. That really says a lot about...
Now, it was on NBC. It was on NBC when it did 11 million. It did 11 million the first season on NBC, and then after the second season, they moved to UPN, and that's when the ratings kind of started to fall off. I think that show kind of got a raw deal, because it was drawing viewers, and you mentioned the 9 million that Scandal did. In the second season on NBC, it did 9.4 million viewers, so I really don't know if there was some politics going on, or if there was something behind the scenes, or if Rush Limbaugh owned a share of NBC, but they got the boot from NBC after that.
They probably tried to use that as an anchor show for UPN, which had some terrible shows. You remember they had Homeboys from Outer Space? Shasta McNasty, I think, was on UPN. Or maybe that was WB. Like they both were terrible.
SmackDown. No, I'm kidding.
Shots fired.
Oh, Gilmore Girls. Boom.
That was WB. Excuse you. Did it right.
SmackDown's got to be like one of the few shows that was on UPN and the CW. No, there's a lot of shows because it was a merger.
Yeah, oh, that's right.
Yeah. I miss UPN and WWB, even and the WB. I turned them into a wrestling federation. But even though they weren't like the best network thing, they offered something different.
They did.
Like you could watch Girlfriends on UPN and Reba on the WB and Smallville, and they had some good shows.
Didn't Sister Sister move to the WB?
You did it too.
I like Sister Sister.
Yeah, I think we're good. Man. WWB. Yeah. But only thing, every time I think of the WB, I think of that Chappelle Show skit with the racist WB frog.
Welcome back, niggas.
Well, that was the first one. That was the first one in the history of the Kings of Sport. Only took 10 shows.
I was quoting somebody.
Our poor non-Blacks listeners are probably very uncomfortable between Nation of Islam College and now this section.
Yeah. Yeah. Show is gonna get
so number 10. What a way to bring Audible into the family, and that.
Ooh, yeah, welcome,
welcome. And again, you can get that free trial, get a free audiobook at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Again, you know, it's a great way to not only help yourself but also to help your favorite new podcast if you're still listening, The Kings of Sport. So with that being said, fellas, let's let them know where they can follow us at, Brother Marcus.
You can follow me on Twitter at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
Big Nasty.
Follow me on Twitter at This Is Nasty. Go on Bleacher Report. Watch the videos. Read the articles. And love me like I know you'd love to do.
His Twitter is now completely N-word free, though, just for those of you out there wondering. And you can follow me at N8, MOZAIK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter as well. You can follow all of us at KOSPOD on Twitter, KOS_POD. Check us out on iTunes. Subscribe, like the show, rate it. Let your friends know. Let your peoples and them know. Stitcher Radio. Just a wide variety. Of course, audibletrial.com/thekingsofsports. So we got a lot of stuff going on, and we're glad that you can take this journey with us. So that's gonna wrap it up for this week. A very hip hop heavy show. It's getting all racial up in this piece, like Neil Patrick Harris said on Undercover Brother. But
Marcus.
How is this my fault?
Come on, you just gonna blame the light skin brother?
Go back to picking cotton, well. Dog. Go back to the fields.
Oh, maybe I will.
Hashtag shots fired.
Maybe I will.
And on that, wonderfully harmonious racial note, we gonna call it a week for the Kings of Sport. Again, big shout out to our guest this week, Jamie Robinson. You can follow him on Twitter, and you can also check out his groups on Facebook, Occupy Hip Hop and Mr. Throwback Thursday. So, for Marcus Vanderberg, for Big Nasty Alpha Cunawa, I am the Godfather Nate Milton, and you've been down with the Kings.
In various ways, you know, some sort of preach and some sort of play. Nevertheless, there's a common ground. You know the deaf hip-hop sound. Hype the bass with a tiny snare. The subwoofer makes your neighbor stare. But still,
I love rap music. Always have and always will.
Drop it. Now, rap started as a voice of the street. A sort of politics to a ghetto beat. The rapper started bragging all about the gold and the girlies and the peepers and the big black O's. In 83, the beatbox hit. I'm making funky drum sounds from out your lips. But taking on new forms, rappers move from the block. And some mix it with soul and some mix it with rock. You know why?
I love rap music. I always have and I always will. There ain't no other kind of music in the world. What makes me feel quite as chill.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend.
The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, fat sacks. Like I just left.